Welcome to B2B, Boots to Books, the show where we explore the journeys of veterans and military-connected students as they navigate their paths from service to the classroom and beyond. I'm Dustin Abrego.
And I'm Rebecca Allen, your hosts. Each week, we'll dive into powerful stories of resilience, determination, and success.
Whether you're a veteran yourself, a military family member, or simply inspired by the strength of those who serve, you're in the right place.
Let's turn the page and start this incredible journey together.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of B2B. I'm Dustin Abrego.
And I'm Rebecca Allen.
And this week we are joined by...
Roy Fernandez.
And...
Dylan Boland, colloquially going by Red.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. So, thanks for joining us. What do you all do here? We're all at LCC, so we're students going here, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So what do you do here, though, at LCC? Because, again, people online don't know.
You want to go first or you want me to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
So we work at the Veteran Center for Family and Veterans, right?
Yeah. We hit record and then everyone just always goes like, because you both answer phones all day and you just nail it every single time. And I go, what do you do? And you go, bull.
We help veterans with how to navigate the college pathway. We help them with figuring out what benefits they're, allotted to, what benefits they're not, if, say, their family members need benefits or something like that. If there's any hiccups or anything, we get some calls sometimes that aren't really needed, but we still try to do our best to answer them. I bet Roy and I have probably had our fair share of those.
So you're student employees for the college or for...
Both, right? it's employed to the VA, ain't it?
For those listening in, Dylan and Roy are work study students for us, meaning that they are veterans who are also students here at LCC and are being paid by the VA to work for us.
So it's a VA benefit type aspect of those things. Sorry, yes. I'm not trying to grill you guys. I was like, well, you're work study students, but I don't expect you guys to remember.
I'm trying to figure out the formal way to say it.
I am employed by said place.
Someone pays
I'm triggered.
Me.
I help veterans that come in.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Roy, would you like to start? What semester is this for you at LCC? What are we doing here at LCC? What's our plan? Have we been in college before? What does all that stuff look like?
Yeah, so I first actually went to LCC when I got out of the service back in 2016. I did about a year and a half, 2 years worth of classes at LCC before I wanted to transfer over to MSU. The plan kind of shifted in my life, and then I had some circumstances that prompted me to return back to schooling, which is nice because I gave my wife the opportunity for her to get her degree, and now she's kind of really given me the opportunity for me to finish pursue my degree. The goal is transferring over to Ferris State University. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of just knocking out some classes that transfer over there in the program I want to go into with computer information technology. So I'm just kind of navigating life again as if I was 18, 20 in the school world.
Sure.
But it's really beneficial, I feel like, for me, even though it's like 10, 12 years later being in my 30s now.
Okay, cool. Dylan?
This is my third semester here at LCC. I've never been to college. This is my first time being to college. One of the first ones in my family to go to college. So it's pretty wild. My mom would argue that, though. She would say, like, oh, I went to a certification school, but it's not like a four-year degree.
There's not a tight definition of first generation. If you have the loose definition is like, if you had direct support, and support is like not necessarily financial, but like this is how you do all these things. Mm-hmm. Which, like, my dad went to college, didn't finish, but, like, kind of did that stuff. But also, when I went to college, it was like, it was way different stuff.
The plan, just become a teacher, history teacher to be exact. I'm knocking my basics out here. Mm-hmm. That way, whenever I transfer to MSU, because MSU has one of the best education programs in the nation, I'll just be ready just to focus on my education degree altogether and get my degree and start teaching the new generation of this country.
Okay. And both of you, like you had said before, are veterans. Dylan, do you want to explain, like, when, because we're kind of hit on it, like, when you exited service and what that looked like, how long ago was that before you started here at LCC?
I exited service back in 2020, right at the height of the pandemic. I had gotten injured on my deployment down to the border. Mm-hmm. And whenever you come back from a deployment, whether it's overseas or in country, they do this thing called the RAT assessment. They noticed that my shoulder was beyond fixable. I had torn the labrum completely off the bone. They said, hey, you're going to have to get out. So I got out, and, you know, I did a couple odd jobs here and there, coached garbage man for a little bit.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, I worked for waste management. It was actually a really fun job, believe it or not. It's you meet a lot of cool people. I will say that. And then I think my final job I did before I moved up here to Michigan was Family Dollar. Just Family Dollar. It was bounced around from job to job. A lot of things that they don't tell you whenever you leave the service is that if you truly don't have a plan, like I didn't have a plan. My plan was to stay in the military.
Like be a lifer?
Yes. I loved it. It gave me a young man who came from an impoverished background with no structure, gave me structure that I needed. So when I got out, I had no plan. I had no idea what I was going to do. I had a idea of what I wanted to do, but to take an idea and turn it into a plan, you have to bring it into fruition. You have to actually act on it. And for the longest time, I didn't act on it. I just, you know, I just bounced around from job to job. And then me and my family moved up here to Michigan. And I was like, you know what? I'm tired of working these dead-end jobs. I want to go back to school. I want to get my degree. I like teaching. I want to teach. So I took the leap, and I think I was more scared of starting it than I was even like getting into it, because I wasn't the best at school when I was in school.
Okay,
you know. So
is that the reason why?
I firmly to starting. Me and school just never really clicked when I was younger, and it doesn't help whenever you come from an area where school isn't a priority. School itself wasn't a priority. Sports are a priority because it keeps you out of the gangs and the drugs. After school programs are a priority. The schools that don't get funded a lot, people don't really care about the academic side of everything, because there's no bright lights. There's no way to get out of poverty through academics unless you want to take that. Everyone wants a quick way. No one wants to take their time, you know, because sometimes you can't take your time route. Sometimes you have to get it right then and there. So that was my big thing. I was scared because I was never really good. I graduated high school, but I was never really good in school. And by good, I mean I struggled. And I still struggle in college, you know, with studying and everything. But I realized that I have more resources now than I did back then.
Then we're getting into this immediately. And also I'll let Rebecca talk because I've just been yapping the whole time. Sorry. And I just see the thread and I want to go with it. When you talk about, because you'd use the term like, afraid to type start, right? But it was not because of what it is. It's because of the back and the story of like,
yes,
oh, school isn't me. As someone not serving, when it's like, I was scared to like come in here and it's like, you're scared to talk to me. Like, I know I don't have like a friendly resting face type deal all the time, but like, I don't know, you guys were in the service and to do really hard things. And people were like, I was afraid of the school. And I was like, bro, what? Like, I feel like that's, but I know that it's not just that on the face value. It's all this other stuff. It's a lived experience, all those other things with it.
With the service, I mean, at that point, everything you do, it's chopped up to live or die. I think we can all attest to that. Every service member in here, from basic training to AIT or what is it, C school for y'all or something, whenever you learn your job. The Marines?
Man, I'm drawing a blank for what I did. It was just the school. I mean, after MCT, after like the combat training, you just got sent to whatever your job school was. I don't remember exactly what, if there was a specific termination for it.
Well, in the Army, it's AIT, where you learned anything like that, you got to learn to do it. If you don't learn to do it, you're going to get kicked out. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. And some sort, like, there's no fail-safe. And I think, honestly, there's a level of, in that type of pressure, in that type of environment, you kind of learn how to thrive. And the people that can't learn how to thrive, they fall out. And it's not against them. It's not for everyone. But I feel like the people that are made for, because people forget, they're always like, oh, just the basic veterans, just the basic military members, not the top tier elite or anything. We're not talking special forces. Even just a normal military member has to go through extensive training, has to do this to make it to just go to a normal unit. So again, it's just a pressure. There's more, you know, it's not like school where you have resources. So you have to either you do it or you don't.
There's no choice.
There is no choice. You don't get no choice. So, and I feel like there's some rewarding, you know, hey, if I don't do this, then I don't know. You find out who you are. I know a lot of people that have gotten their bachelor's and still don't know who they are, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
I was partially that. Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Schoolhouse, by the way. The Marines kept it real simple.
Schoolhouse.
I was trying to think. I was like, was there something was an acronym that for the school? Was it really that special? No, it was just the schoolhouse.
Just schoolhouse.
Just
schoolhouse.
Had to keep it nice and simple.
Just well, basic. I mean, come on. You know, it's the Marines.
Yeah. Does that track with what you felt, experienced, thought, Roy, of like the choices, the in and out type deal of things? Like, I don't know, when I've heard like Dylan talk about this or any of you talk about this, it's because I get and only interact with you all once you're out, right? After you've had this experience. And it's always interesting to me because you didn't have a choice. And I thought that that would like ingrain in people, which is a stereotype in my head that I've had to break for sure, of like, well, that's just how they are now. But then they get out and they're like, nope, all that's gone by. That was never my thing. I got it. Nope. See you later. Does any of that track for you? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think everyone has their own experiences. And I think all their experiences that they have lead to how they really interact while they're in, while they're out. You know, we all have different reasons why we enlisted. Some people, family traditions. Some people are in neighborhoods and areas that are a lot less fortunate and are trying to do better for themselves. So they find this opportunity. Recruiters come out and kind of, you know, tell the kids, hey, this is a way to be able to get out where you're at. You can see the world. You can learn a job. You can learn a trade. You can do so much. And a lot of people end up going into the military with that mentality of, I'm going to do better for myself. Sometimes it goes their way. Sometimes it doesn't. It's just a matter of, like, again, your experiences. I know a lot of people that were in my schoolhouse when I went in through boot camp that are still in. I know some that are lieutenants. There are officers that went in and enlisted. I know some people that are now are like gunnery sergeants. So it's like an E7. I was a one and done. I did 4 years and I was out. Once a Marine, always a Marine. So why re-enlist? That was my mentality on it, right? Initially, I when I first went in, I was like, oh, if I can do 20 years, I can retire. I'll be 38 when I get out. I was 17 years old. I spent my 18th birthday in the hotel before I went out to MAPS. So I was as young as I could without getting my parents to sign. But I didn't really know what I was doing also. I was a first-generation immigrant. I was born in Cuba. I came to the United States when I was 3 and a half. And I was raised by my parents. And while my parents did get an education in Cuba, they didn't know the way that the United States really operated in public schooling and higher education. Right. It was just, this is a better place in Cuba. So
there's no Castro here.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So the higher education, I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea. So the Marines came to the school and I was like, there's no way I'm doing the Marines. All I know Marines is shooting, gunning, infantry, front lines. And I told them, with someone like me with two last names, I'm the first one out. Like, there's no way I'm doing that. But we you know, I gave them the opportunity to have a discussion with me. And you know, we sat down and we discussed different job titles and different job roles and different things that the Marines do. And it opened my eyes of like the opportunity that this could give me. And I took it. You know, I got out after the 4 years, obviously, but I learned a lot. I feel like one of the things that I took away from it was being a man, learning how to, you know, have honor, have integrity, doing the right thing, having your friends back. One of the things I always talk about is blood isn't always family. You know, I've got some of the closest friends was in the Marines. They were groomsmen of mine when I got married. I've got a wedding this September in Boston for one of my guys. I'm his best man.
Nice.
So, I mean, I think I've been to 4 weddings now from all of my guys that were.
So if you want to get married, be a Marine is what I'm hearing out of all this. Okay.
I just came back from a wedding. A buddy of mine just got married and I was one of his groomsmen. So
yeah.
It like that bond never stops. Right. I definitely understand that. Mm-hmm.
The term I always say is I miss the clowns, not the circus.
Gotcha.
Rebecca, you're being awfully quiet over there.
Dustin likes a yap. It's fine.
I enjoy listening to you guys talk. That's why I wanted to bring you on. Oh. So, Roy, one thing that I did want to ask about, so you mentioned that you came to LCC after you got out and then you took a break from school. I know we've discussed a few times you had a real big boy job before you came back to school. What was that like? Like coming from being in service and then going to school and then going into real world civilian jobs and then transitioning back into school. How was that?
It was very interesting for me. I worked in the financial institution world. And I learned a lot. Honestly, it's probably one of the most beneficial things I could have done for myself. personally and financially, because I learned how the entire credit system works, how financial institutions can help you or hurt you, depending on how you handle your finances. And I was able to be very, very impactful in other people's lives, giving them an opportunity, having great conversations. To some degree, I was an educator. A lot of people in this country, whether they were born here, speak English, speak another language, they don't know how it honestly operates.
I still don't know how it operates. Give me a class. My credit is horrible.
I was able to instruct people and teach them, and being in the industry for as long as I was, you were able to kind of see them start from scratch or start from, like, this is a bad place to be in financially, and then make a turnaround or be on the right path and get them started, and then seeing them 2, 3, 4 years down the line and seeing how well they've come along, I think was great. It was great for me as a person. You know, it's like, you know, they listened and look at them now. And now they're flourishing. It was an awesome feeling. So I learned a lot. It was great. You know, my wife still works in that industry, so I'm still kind of in tune with a lot of things that are happening. But it wasn't my passion. While it was very beneficial, it wasn't what I wanted to always be known for and do. So it was a set of circumstances that happened for me that prompted me to come back to school. And honestly, at the time, I thought it was like, it's the worst thing that could have happened to me. I was scared. It was awful. I was in tears, not in front of my wife, but I cried in front of the Ingham County director, I believe, for veteran services. And, you know, my wife was crying for what had transpired, but I stayed strong in front of her because I couldn't see her. I couldn't have her see me like that. So, but then I just bawled like a baby.
You almost feel defeated whenever, because you feel like you failed. You're having to go back. The same situation. I understand. I really do. You've done so much. You've gotten so far, and then you're like, really? I'm back at square one. That's what it feels like. Right. I understand that.
I felt like it was, you know, I was taking so many steps forward, and then it all got ripped down, and I was like 3 steps back from where I first started when I started getting into the real world jobs in the civilian sector. But now, after giving it some time, getting back into schooling, getting back into the flow of things, because it really is. You have to get the mentality right. You have to get everything right. You have to understand your resources available to you. Speaking with the benefits advisor, Rebecca, Dustin, like, you need all the resources you can get to put this plan together, because we're not an expert in this field in schooling and education.
You shouldn't have to be.
And that's what you guys are there for, to really kind of guide us. And it has grounded me, I felt like, and it has helped me tremendously emotionally, mentally, to be able to be back into schooling, into what I want to do, into the degree I want to pursue. And then also the work study program that allows me to kind of really interact with veterans a lot more and interact with you guys. It's been honestly a blessing, even though what happened to me I felt was awful at the time.
I would like to piggyback off of what you said and what Dustin said, not being an expert, and we don't have to be. Well, what you might not know and what a lot of civilians might not know is whenever you get out of the military, you go through classes. They say that, okay, you take this class, you'll be ready for the civilian world. You take this class. And I don't want to throw it out there like that, but I feel like that's a area that the military fails a lot of veterans, because the classes, I can't speak for Rebecca or Roy, but I know whenever I was going through those classes, they were half-assed. The people did not care. The civilians there were there to, you know, make their money. More respect to them. But they were there to make their money. You know, they read from a script. Like, literally, my financial one read from a script. This is how you have a bank account. Like, that's literally how it went. And I feel like the military in a whole fails the out process for veterans. And and I feel like, you know, at that point, it's like, hey, you served us and everything, but you're no longer with us. We're not going to put our full resources into you. You're leaving. And that's why there's like so much on retention as well. They would rather retain you than be like, okay, we're going to help you get out. I remember before I got injured, I had re-upped, and they were so gung-ho on getting me to sign that contract, that they even gave me the base I wanted to go to. I wanted to go to Fort Hood. They were like, you're signed, which I look back on now, I was like, Fort Hood? What is wrong? But they were like, signed, you know? Never once were they were like, well, if you don't want to re-up, we have great resources. And it, I feel like that's somewhere where the military fails us veterans.
I think the problem with that, too, is, yeah, so there's the TAP program when you're getting out. I don't know if it's the same thing for Marines. I know that active duty, though, it's across the board. You're supposed to have those classes. With the Guard, that doesn't happen. You're supposed to go through those classes. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're supposed to go through those classes, but it's hit or miss if they're even being offered.
They don't force you. No. I had to go. No. I was not allowed mm-hmm. to leave the base until I had my everything felt. Really?
When I got out, it was, all right. See ya.
That's absolutely wild.
Yep. I had people that didn't even know that I was getting out. Like, we had a formation. We had our final formation. And I remember standing at the back of that formation going, okay, this is it. Like, this is 7 years of my life. And people are just, they're walking out the door. I'm never going to see some of these people again. There were no classes. There was no, like, checking out, anything like that. My sergeant was like, hey, make sure that your gear is turned in. Or at least, like, you know, it's in the locker over in the armory. Like,
they just really say, oh, well, goodbye.
Yeah. Like, drop off your keys with the supply sergeant. Make sure that the supply sergeant can get into your locker for all your gear. Like, so now, like, you do have to go through CIF. You got to turn in your gear now. Okay. But, like, when I got out, it wasn't like that. It was make sure that supply sergeant knew where your gear was.
Slowly it's getting better, I guess.
I guess. But
when I was in Japan, I just remember I had to get signature from every department head.
Yeah.
From every single person in the squadron regarding every single thing. And I remember going in to my sergeant major's office and he's just hounding me on, like, why I'm getting out. Mm-hmm. It's not for me. I just want to be a civilian. I want to go back to the civilian life and mm-hmm. pursue and use my benefits, GI Bill, go to school. Mm-hmm. And I remember him telling me, just getting so upset.
Yep. That someone's getting so out mad.
And yeah. telling you that all you're going to ever be is a McDonald's employee. And I was like, beats being here?
Yep. Beats like, being here. If that's your attitude, then I don't even want to, like, I don't want to be in your unit. Like, yeah. I had somewhat a similar thing with my battalion commander. The same thing. He got mad at all of us that were getting out. And mind you, I was getting out due to medical reasons.
Right.
And he would
It's so petty. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. This is a combo for you all. It was just like, why are you leaving our group?
Yeah.
Yes. That's exactly what it is.
It's a mean girl.
So mean girl.
Yes.
We're all in a certain age demographic. Yeah. You can't tell with a movie reference.
It is very much a mean girl's ideology of it. Like, oh my God, I can't believe that. It's really that. But you have this grown man or a grown woman looking at you and be like, you're really good. Sir, I tore my shoulder. What do you want from me? Mm-hmm. Like, but the military fails veterans and military members alike in lots of aspects. One big one is getting out. And I think another one that, honestly, the VA and the military in general fail is just the initial outwards processing. Like, right after you get out. I remember when I got out, and I left the base. I was driving the U-Haul, and my little brother was in the U-Haul with me. And he was like, he looked at me. He was like, what are you going to do? And we're driving from, because I was stationed in Louisiana, and I'm driving back to Texas. And it was quiet for a while. We were just listening to a podcast. And he turns down the radio, and he looks at me. He's like, so what are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know. My past 4 years of my mm-hmm. life, I have been told mm-hmm. where to go. Mm-hmm. I have been told when to wake up. I have been told what time. I have been told all of this, and now I just have freedom. It's like if you were to take an animal in a zoo. Mm. They have been on a schedule their entire lives. They have known nothing but that zoo. And then one day, you take that animal and you throw them back into their original habitat. Mm-hmm. That animal, 9 times out of 10, is going to die.
Right.
And it is said, I wouldn't say 9 times out of 10 for the veteran community, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. I would say more than 7 out of 10. They get back out into the civilian world, and they just can't readjust. And by readjust, I'm not saying just become a regular, just back to being who you are. For the longest time, and every military and veteran person can attest to this, whenever you're in the military, whether you're out, you can always remember your time in, you were the Army. That was your personality. You were the Marines. That was your, am I wrong? You were that service. And whenever you get out, you genuinely feel lost. I did not know. And I think that scared me more than not having a job or not having money. Mm-hmm. That scared me more.
I'm going to follow up on this. Okay. For those of us listening in, please stick around for part two. We're going to keep talking about this. So stick around. We'll be right back. You've been listening to B2B, Boots to Books.
Thank you for joining us on this journey through the inspiring stories of veterans and military-connected students.
If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your community.
We'd love to hear from you, so connect with us on social media or take a listen to previous episodes at lccconnect.com or your favorite streaming platform.
Remember, every story is a step forward.
And together, we can build a bridge from boots to books.
Until next time, stay strong.
And keep moving forward.
Featuring the faculty, staff, students, and others that helped to make Lansing's premier college what it is today. LCC Connect, Mid-Michigan's connection to Lansing Community College. To find out more about our featured programs or to listen on demand, visit us at lccconnect.org.
LCC Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
The stage is alive and well at Lansing Community College. Each year, the downtown campus comes to life with more than 30 performances at Dart Auditorium, the Black Box Theater, and LCC's Outdoor Amphitheater. These productions are more than entertainment. They're part of the learning experience. Students in LCC's Performing Arts program gain hands-on experience, both on stage and behind the scenes, developing confidence, creativity, and collaboration. From powerful plays to lively concerts, LCC's performances celebrate local talent and the vibrant spirit of the arts in our community. All performances are free. Find out what's next at lcc.edu/showinfo.
The Lansing Community College Job Training Center provides opportunities for individuals to earn several work certifications in 3 months or less.
Career training options are available both online and in person, covering a range of careers,
including healthcare, automation, IT, accounting, and more.
A complete list of LCC Job Training Center programs can be found at lcc.edu/JTC.
LCC
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.
It's time for Stars on Sports,
a podcast radio show dedicated to sharing stories about our athletic program at LCC, past and present.
Lansing Community College Athletics has a strong tradition.
25 national championships.
Over 190 All-Americans.
19 MCCAA All-Sports trophies.
Stars on Sports will introduce you to individuals that have contributed to our program's success and give you the backstory on what it takes to develop it.
We'll also dive into and break down the topics and issues facing athletic departments across the nation and right here at LCC.
This is Stars on Sports.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Stars on Sport. Today I'm joined as usual by our assistant AD Stephen Cutter and our excellent producer Dedalion Lowry. And gentlemen, we're going to be talking about motivation today. We're starting a new year, and as I've talked before on this podcast, it's easy to get motivated and get excited for a new year. I was listening to one of my sports leadership podcasts, how they mentioned motivation determines success. And I know, you know, you disagree with that a little bit, and so do I, because of that second part of motivation. But having said again, you know, in researching how important motivation is to even starting something, one of my favorite quotes, like, you know, I give presentations throughout the year to different groups, and I always use a video or a quote or a short story. And one of the quotes I used a long time ago was, you know, I give credit to Lou Holtz, but I don't know. There's sure other people, but his quote was, ability is what you're capable of doing,
Motivation determines what you do, and attitude determines how well you do it. And it was weird, but I got a lot of compliments on that. I mean, people came up to me and said, oh, I love that quote. And this was, you know, 20 years ago. But, and there are three things in there that are instrumental in athletic success: ability, motivation, and attitude. And I know you'd throw another one in there because of the motivation, that first part, but action of doing it is actual, some would argue, more important. I'd like to a little focus on because, you know, we have, you know, 180 student athletes starting up in the last couple of weeks, and they all bring a different motivation on why they're coming to LCC this year to participate in our athletic program. The same is true for us, you know, our coaches, our staff, me, people here at LCC. You know, there's something motivating them, some a lot stronger than others, to come back and have a great year at LCC. So what do you think of when you think of motivation?
Well, I think that motivation is definitely internal. That doesn't mean that you can't get motivation from external things. However, I believe it's pretty internal. So in a lot of ways, it's pretty selfish. And when you speak about everybody's coming into a new season, they have motivations. Most of those motivations are pretty selfish. You know, they want to see themselves get better. They want to see themselves get playing time. They want to see their names in the Lansing State Journal, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And there's nothing yeah. wrong with that. But motivation can also be very fleeting because it's challenging. It's a long season for mm-hmm. student athletes, you know, and it's super exciting on day one, but day 35, it's can get a little monotonous.
The yeah. Dale, you want to chime in yet? Or
well, I agree with what Cut's saying. I think most of the time, motivation is going to be self-serving. Mm-hmm. However, I would also say that motivation wanes as the day-to-day goes. I guess you were kind of saying that too. It's the stacking bricks part that mm-hmm. most of the time, your motivation, yeah. trying to keep it up, trying to yeah. keep it going, and trying to re-spark it once you lose it.
There's that duality to it. It's like if you want to be an author, you often gravitate towards the part of where you're doing the book signings and the interviews and the stuff when the book's done. You also got to buy into all those lonely times of typing.
Yeah. And I'd also agree that I don't think motivation does equal success, but I do feel like it fuels success. It
helps. Man, you guys are on fire today. So, man, a lot to dive into. What
it's because we got
said.
The motivation.
Yeah, you guys prep for this one. But definitely motivation is different for each person. And I believe the great coaches and the great leaders handle that well, because especially as you get through the season. And as you alluded to, there is intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. And in sports, it's pretty easy for the extrinsic because most people winning is that extrinsic motivation. To both your point, on day 37, you might not even have a game yet and you're not seeing the win. So stacking those bricks, finding other ways to celebrate success, but it's, you know, more that internal motivation that helps you, which is, you know, again, what we've talked a lot about on this podcast, the process, that routine, that struggle. And then to Dedalian's point, I have a little quote here about motivation doesn't guarantee success, but without motivation, there is no success. Because it's that first step in that process. I mean, once you get started, you know, and I do that every day when I get on the treadmill. I don't look forward. I mean, getting on the treadmill isn't exciting. It's not. But when I get going after 2 minutes, you know, then I'm into it. You know, now I remember why I do it and I feel good. And it's like my wake up, get that first mile blues or something. It's just getting that first mile under your belt and then it's smooth sailing. But motivation is a big part of that first mile of actually even trying to do it. To your point of, we gravitate to a lot of things that we like, and 180 student athletes coming. Some are coming because their parents want them to come. Some are coming because they love the sport. Some are coming because they're talented. Some are coming because it's fun to them. And those are all important attributes, and those are all things we need to celebrate and identify and help them, because in the end, you're right. Motivation is the start, but we always talk about what's the finish, you know, developing them to be better today than yesterday and stacking those bricks over time. Again, another word that you've taught me that I like more is drive, purpose. You know, that's kind of synonymous with motivation a little bit.
What would you say the difference is, though?
That's a great question.
That's why I asked it.
Well, I think trying to keep in the motivation frame, it's understanding that there's the cognitive insights of why, you know, why is this taking place? And so you can see people that are extremely motivated, extremely driven, and the wind or in our sector, I would call it playing time, okay. is mm-hmm. the wind. And the wind blows out their fire. But if they have intensity, it's a blowtorch, and it doesn't blow that out, and it fuels them. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing. So the hardest part about the motivation is you can be as motivated as you want to be, but there's going to be some valleys that are going to happen, whether you're a student athlete or you're a human being. And a lot of times those valleys can blow out that drive, that motivation. And so it's the ability to keep stacking bricks, keep moving forward. As Brian King says, you know, it's that first mile. It's not going to be great, but if you can get through it, you're going to feel a whole lot better about yourself and the direction you're heading.
Yeah. So would you say the drive is the thing that keeps you going even when the motivation yeah. isn't there?
Yeah, because yeah. it's in that world, a lot of times it's not there, and it can't come from the phone or music or anything. Mm-hmm. It's got to come from inside.
I think they're synonymous in a way, and I think you alluded to both parts of that. Drive and motivation are similar, but I look as drive as that next level too, you know, that farther step that helps you keep the motivation going. It's like a higher level of motivation. And again, there's many variables for coaches and student athletes and people in general to develop that drive, because you got to have persistence, you got to have resiliency, you got to have determination. The drive kind of encompasses them with motivation, but then once the motivation weighs, and it's really come down to your why, you know, what does motivate you, and that's your drive. When you look at in the past, you know, one of the things that coaches always said was, you know, I'll take a person that works hard over talent, because a talented person that doesn't work hard, you will pass them. And that's having that drive, that motivation, but it's finding your why and inspiring, because coaches have to inspire. Going to run a mile isn't fun, or, you know, unless you listen to our Coach Robinson podcast, and he's running 33 miles. So it's that why, and we've talked about, you know, I'm a big believer in knowing your why, and feel thankful that I feel like I have a why with what I do every day.
It's also the hard part for everybody else is understanding what is their why. That progression still goes back to a motivation internally of what do I want to do? What am I really adept at? That kind of stuff. And that helps you figure out what your why is. And maybe it's serving people. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's growing. And if it's growing, it's understanding that the growth never ends. There's not a finish line on it. It's just continuously trying to stack bricks.
Yeah. And again, it's a great question. Whenever my kids played sports, I always wanted to see them smiling out there. If they're having fun, I wanted them to keep doing it and going further with it. It's a question you ask yourself every day. Why do I do it? Why do I do it? And if you can answer that honestly, I think, you know, you'll be able to, again, the grind is tough. I mean, practices are hard. Games, there are adversity. But, you know, if you start with your motivating you doing something you want to do instead of what you're forced to do, can go a long way. And that's a challenging thing in our business nowadays because of all the external factors, such as trying to get that scholarship, getting your name in the paper, instead of if you do all the things you're supposed to do, then that's the result that will happen.
It's challenging for college athletes just in general, because a lot of times they're playing college sports because they're pretty solid at mm-hmm. that said sport. But they're also playing for parents. They're playing for former coaches and the pressure that, you know, they're supposed to be playing because they're pretty solid at it. Then you add in basically a full-time job. You're mm-hmm. putting in a ton of hours in a week, and mm-hmm. those weeks just keep stacking. It's not a 4-week season. It's yeah. you know, in the baseball terms, it starts in early August and finishes in late May or early June. That's a baseball season. That's yeah. how long it is. And most high school kids, I can't say all, but I would mm-hmm. say pretty darn close, most high school kids, they've never been a part of something that long, that consistent. And if you're doing it for other people, parents, coaches, you know, family members, mm-hmm. and not doing it for yourself, you start looking like, why am I doing this? You know,
right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
there has to be some intensity. There has to be some passion. There has to be some love for what you're doing, or on an athlete's version, it's some love for the sport.
And that's a great point in the sense of that even greater than winning, because we've seen mm-hmm. coaches and players and high level coaches and win Super Bowls or win regional championships and almost feel relieved or like, you know, this is it. I mean, you know, we haven't even talked about Scottie Scheffler on here is under some, you know, criticism lately because he talked about yeah. winning a golf tournament
yeah.
isn't.
I don't
yeah.
buy it.
Yeah. I don't and I think his point was that, you know, like I told you before, and he talked about I can handle that last putt on the Masters because I'm Gonnie Scheffler, whether I win the Masters or not. But obviously, he's trying to win the Masters. And, you know, there was another pro athlete that came out and said, no, you got to want this. But that's true for our student athletes, too, is, you know, because motivation isn't always pretty or exciting. I mean, again, I talk about fun and happy and smiling, but it's not always pretty, like waking up to go to practice every day. Sometimes you do it just because you know you have to do it. So it's not always pretty. You know, it's part of the process that, you know, we see it a lot in the military training. Just don't quit, you know, quit tomorrow, you know, kind of a thing that keep you going, because hopefully there is something at that end that is rewarding and joyous. But it doesn't start without motivation, because, again, motivation is intrinsic and it's in your mind that your body will follow you even that first mile, you know, and then you got to feed it. We talked about New Year's resolutions before on this podcast and how those don't last. I mean, now they've got science like the third week in January, like quit day, because everyone, you know, they're done with their resolutions by then because they've lost motivation.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things, and we've talked about it before, and we probably should just do a podcast on this in itself, is having an accountability partner. And I am a big believer in an accountability partner, and have been fortunate to have many good ones in my life. And you currently, you know, even like someday, I'm not going to do a podcast. You're like, hey, see you in the studio on Wednesday. We're doing it. And it's good. But you got to have one. And that's the nice thing about sports, is we're surrounded by them.
Yes.
You know, our team, our coaches, our accountability partners, and hopefully in a positive way, because I don't think you can do it without it. Even with that motivation, you know, the days are up and down. So, you know, it starts with your why, then it goes with goal setting, then it's routine, which I thought Coach Robinson did a nice job of talking about routine in his podcast, for those that need to go back and listen to it, about how important routine is in running and in performing on that day. And I think it's true in a lot of our things. You know, he talked about it as it makes you less nervous by having routine, which we've talked about routine and confidence before, kind of at least the trust and such. So routine's a big part of helping with motivation. And then again, the people part, the team part. Something I'm not sure we always do well, except for with the winning, is celebrating our successes. And I mean, Nihir and Dedalion, you know, quote us before on stacking bricks in that. But I think that goes a long way as you find certain points through the season, especially as, you know, a lot of our teams have started this last week. New kids, new team, new routines, new stresses away from home, that you probably got to capitalize on those more right now, of stacking those bricks and celebrating successes to keep them motivated. Because retention is an important factor for me in our teams, and that, like I asked you today, I asked our softball coach this morning, everyone come back after the first day of practice. You know, that's a big deal to me, you know, and both of me answered yes. And the first day of practice is hard for a lot of people because there's a lot of conditioning and getting them caught up. But it starts with helping them understand each kid's motivation and finding a way to celebrate those successes, because that's not easy. Do you guys celebrate more in early in the season? I mean, you just celebrate regularly? I mean,
try to. It's definitely been difficult because, you know, I certainly was raised in a generation where you don't necessarily celebrate your successes.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
Our children have been raised in a different generation, mm-hmm, where celebration of your personal stuff is somewhat applauded.
Yeah.
So trying to find that happy line there. I've spoken before about, in just our sport of baseball, which I think it applies in some other sports too, you know, we'd hear sayings, act like you've been there before.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad you brought that up. When I've had coaches like evaluate me before, celebrating successes has probably been one of my lower end. I'm a very positive person and I will build them up, encourage them, but I've always expect to win, you know, and I struggle with some of these highlight ratings because you expect to make that tackle or that great throw.
That's the biggest word, is the expectations. And mm-hmm. So when people have high expectations, they certainly expect this to happen. And so the winning is just, it's winning. And you'll hear things, and I've said it as well, it's like, I hate losing more than I love winning.
Yep, me too.
You know, and so that's just having high standards or high expectations. It's also not being a unicorn and thinking that life is going to be perfect and you're just expecting it to be perfect. But it still comes back to how you respond to the things that are happening, and how you respond still comes back to what you're talking about today, which is your internal motivation.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm going to go off a side subject, and this is so stupid, but when you talk about I hate losing more than I like winning, I had a colleague that had that poster up in his classroom, and he attributed Yvonne Lendl, and I truly believe that's me. And I fight every day to be better than yesterday, and I stay in the present a lot, I believe. But you made a point within my last 4 years of working with me that now I fight every day is we all lose in the end, that we're going to die. And I'm thinking, no, I never even thought of that. And I'm not going to, I'm going to fight that because I hate losing that much that I got to figure out a way to be that one.
Who knows? You know, so you usually say that at the end of your podcast. Is that what you're always referring to? Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I figured.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more about.
How do you say it? You say it, we're all fighting a battle we can't win. Is that what it is?
So play it or do it to the utmost.
Yeah.
And it's really just the understanding. It's not the grim kind of thing, but it's like, hey, be present. Some of this stuff that you're stressing about right now, think about it a little bit. Think about it in that context. And does that really, what you're stressing about right now, is that really going to matter? Mm-hmm. No. You start to have a little bit different perspective on stuff and not put all this pressure on yourself on things that really don't matter that much. Yeah. And when you can look at things like that, the walls can become a little more blue and the sun's a little bit different.
And that's been a positive, again, back to our way of thinking of celebrating success. That has been one of the positive changes is it really going to matter a year from now if we lost to this game or this team? Yeah. And even failure, you know, because, you know, we're so worried about our kids failing that I'm not a big risk taker, as I've shared before. But when you look back in life, science has, you know, helped study and prove that you're more regretful of the risk you didn't take than the failure that you did have. And, you know, we fail every day. But motivation is part of that, again, tying it back into rebounding after a failure.
Yeah, just showing up in the podcast studio.
I mean,
we're not experts at any of this, and we just keep showing up.
Well, the Dalian is. That's why we keep him along.
I would argue that point, but I appreciate the love.
Well, we love it. So, and you're going to love our last question today, too. So I'm running out of food questions, but I'm going to keep going until we end.
Nearing 100 episodes, and you had a darn near 100 food questions.
By the time I actually get around to coming up with an intro for him, he'll be done with those stars on food.
Yeah. So I like them. When I listen to them, I think they're funny. This one, we're going to take pizza out of it, but start the school year, school lunches are a big theme. So
the square pizza in school.
Yeah, so my question twofold. What's your favorite school lunch currently or in the past, and what do you think of when you think of your school days of school lunch?
Wait, you said you were going to take pizza out of this.
Well, I know, because I'm sure his favorite school lunch is pizza.
It was.
Yes.
It was.
Yes. But take pizza out of it, I'm saying. Like,
I feel like the food was probably pretty average or bad.
It is. You know? It is.
But the highlight for when I think back was the ability to get two chocolate milks.
Wow, that is a good one. That's a good answer. Again, the square pizza or the rectangular pizza was popular, but another popular one in the school that I was hamburger gravy.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds awful on its own, and even worse at a school lunchroom.
It was good.
Setting.
It was mashed potatoes with hamburger gravy on it. It was really good. You know,
are you trying to convince me?
No,
you sound
I don't
like
care.
You're trying to.
I'm not motivated to convince you. I'm just sharing
so
you the
you
answer
had
to
that
my question.
Since school, have you had that?
Yeah, like again, I've worked in schools my whole life, so I would eat lunch. You know, the other one that was, you know, pretty safe and good with nachos. You know, chips and cheese. You know, school lunches haven't changed. College lunches have changed. I mean, their cafeterias are pretty nice. Like, even here, when we had the cafeteria, like our first couple of years ago, there was, you know, a good quesadilla or a good burger that I would go to regular. Did you ever, I mean, you've been here a while, so you've experienced a lot of different food choices here. Do you have a favorite?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and go back to, you know, the elementary school days.
Uh-huh.
Because actually my favorite was... And what would happen would be the school would purchase pizza from whatever local place.
Yep.
And almost everybody was going to be there at lunch because of that. Now, that having been said, since you want me to take pizza out of the equation.
Well, that's a good point. That's twofold. I remember the rectangular pizza, but yes, I do remember school getting a local one too. Hungry Howie Day on a Friday, yeah, once a month or something. So good clarification to that.
Which my second favorite food, of course, is subs, and they had a sub day. But it wasn't from a place. Yeah. But they had like these little tiny subs, submarine sandwiches.
That's funny. I do not remember a good memory of those sub being good at
they weren't, but they were better than everything else on the school lunch menu. So
no good side that I can remember either, but the two chocolate milks was a good one too. I bring my lunch in a lot because there isn't really, you know, we don't have hot food on campus per se.
Yeah, typically I bring in a lunch if I bring something in. Usually like a ham and cheese, or I bring in a sub.
Oh, nice. Peanut butter and jelly.
PB&Js.
Okay.
So RDK approved.
Are healthier more than the Uncrustables. Okay. And peanut butter and jelly is a great sandwich for our student athlete that we would encourage our kid to make one for after school when the bell rang, and then before practice to have a peanut butter sandwich. You know, in school lunches, it become more healthy. I mean, when I first started, there was soft serve ice cream that I was the number one client for the soft serve ice cream by the end, though we couldn't even have ice cream.
The food thing is a big thing. You know, I know we've seen in our program as we track through InBodies and RDK and stuff, extreme growth. Mm-hmm. And then once the season starts, you start seeing the slide, and it's because there's more requirements on them. They're competing more consistently. They're also practicing and trying to figure out how to manage that piece of it and understand the insights that are involved with
it. And it's come a long way. And I call it a separator now. Nutrition is a separator for us, because those that do it well are going to perform at their best. And it even made it to the high school setting. I mean, I remember our swim coach, because they burn so many calories, was really strict on their regimen throughout the day. And our teams here at LCC use RDK or other nutritional resources she provided for us, because it is so important to get optimal performance. Yet, time too of, you know, again, is that a lot easier to go home and make one, which we know these kids don't have a lot of time or spend a lot of time.
Just briefly, just because you mentioned her name a couple times, elaborate a little bit just so people who understand who RDK is here at the college.
You're probably better than me, but she's a consultant for us. We brought her in for our general student body presentation. She has a business where sports nutrition is her main focus, and we've just really learned a lot. And the nicest thing about her presentations are they're tailored to high school and college kids, which is so important because of their schedule, their day, their money, their resources, being realistic of what they will and will not follow. You know, as we've talked about drinking pop, they'll drink it just when is the optimum time to drink it. There are other resources out there. We've tried to use our college. They have some valuable resources on nutrition. The thing that RDK brings is her background in sports, performance, and nutrition. So, you know, our teams have utilized her consulting services, and she deserved the plug here because it's important. Nutrition is so important because even back to motivation, that waking up and being healthy and nutrition satisfied with vitamins and that. And it's amazing what these kids even know nowadays with all the supplements and that. It helps, you know, motivate them to perform at the highest.
Right.
So go to your school lunch in about an hour after we do this. But until next time, go Stars.
Stars on Sports is recorded live at the WLNZ Studios. Engineering and production assistance are provided by Dedalion Lowry, and you can listen to the episode and other episodes of Stars on Sports on demand at lccconnect.org. To find more information about our athletic program, visit lccstars.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to join us next time for more Stars on Sports.
Go Stars!
This has been LCC Connect Weekly, a presentation of LCC Connect, a podcast network developed by Lansing Community College. Production and sound engineering for LCC Connect Weekly and its podcasts are provided by Dedalion Lowry and Brendan Skipper. Our theme song, Start a New Day, is performed by Samuel Biggs and licensed through DeWolf Music. Powered by the voices of LCC staff, faculty, students, and community volunteers, LCC Connect shares conversations and stories that reflect the creativity, culture, and the spirit of our college and community. We thank all of our hosts and contributors for sharing their time and talents. To hear today's featured podcast on demand, learn more about the network, become a guest, or explore ways to get involved, visit us anytime at lccconnect.com.
LCC.
Connect.
Voices.
Vibes.
Vision.